Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 28 of season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is DJ Valentine, a.k.a. Hans Gruber.
Hans Gruber, not Hans Gruber, Han. As the Millennium Falcon, I take over Nakatomi Tower. It's two different.
It depends who you ask. Some people call him Han. Some people call him Han.
Lando calls him Han. For some
That's right. Han, he does it just to piss him off. He does it to piss him off.
That's to piss him off, apparently. According to Solo, a Star Wars story. Yeah, remember that great film, Solo?
I actually love it. It's okay.
It's fun. There's been worse. There's been way worse.
That is true. That is definitely true. All right. Well, minute 28 begins with Hans showing off how much of an intellectual he is, and finishes with Hans ending his lecture about the classics. So, as we've been talking about the last 2 days, Hans is trying to show how much he's in charge of everything that's going on here. He's the one who has taken everyone prisoner. We're not sure why. Hopefully we'll find out by the end of the week. Not really sure. But, he's having these... would you think he's a psychopath the way that on some hands he's... on the one hand, he's talking calmly. On the other hand, sometimes he gets a little erratic with the
sociopath,
way that he's
maybe, but I don't think psychopath. He's too in control, I think, of his emotions, because he calms Carl down, who probably is a psychopath. if Hans was a psychopath, I think he wouldn't care if Carl blew up the building. He to have a carefully laid out plan such as what Hans has, I think he's more of a...
Well, only Hans has the plan. No one else knows the plan. That's the irony here.
I would see him more of a sociopath than a psychopath.
Right. Okay. All right. That's fair. I think that what Hans has done here is he's compartmentalized the whole plan. So Carl knows parts of it, and Theo knows parts of it, and some of the other guys know parts of things that are going on.
And why
but
do you
he's
think
the
he
only
did that?
One. Because he was probably
my theory on why he does that.
Well, I would say that he's like the Joker. He was just going to kill everybody and take it all himself.
I didn't think that. I don't think that. I think it's the opposite. I think Hans is smart enough to know the men that he's working with are psychopaths. So if they knew the whole plan, they'd kill him and take all the money. So if he's keeping the plan all to himself, he's more valuable to them. I always see it that way. Then he's going to kill. I mean, he could probably outthink him and take the money anyway, but I think the only strong relationship he kind of has, and it's not even strong, but just stronger, is with Theo and Carl.
Right.
But these other guys, what's his name? Viggo from Ghostbusters 2. All those other guys?
James. I think his name is James.
They're
cannon fodder.
Cannon fodder or thugs that will, if they knew the whole plan, they'd be like, why do we need this Hans Gruber guy? They're dressed like men about business. Hans is a suit. He's very refined. They would probably kill him.
Well, they've got European clothes, and they smoke European cigarettes.
Right, but they're more Marvel men European clothes than I'm gonna wear. Like, Hans could be a terrorist, or he could be the CEO of a company. They look like they're about to take over some stuff. So, like, I think Hans knows I retain my most value if I'm the one that knows the whole plan. I think it's the opposite. Because the Joker, you're right. The Joker was like, I'm going to kill all these people anyway. And I don't even care what happens if I die or not, because it's just chaos. But I think Hans is like, well, I need strong men who don't mind killing. But these men won't mind killing to the point where they won't mind killing me. So I have to tell him certain parts of this plan and leave stuff out, because I lose my usefulness if I do that. That's how
I didn't think about that. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I see it anyway. We have no idea exactly what Steven D'Souza wanted or thought, but maybe he mentioned it in a commentary, but that's how I always interpreted it.
Okay. That's actually great. I like that theory. I'm going to go with that one. Mm. Yeah. surveys on the top 10 surveys on the board.
Yes.
99.
Also, Hans, again, we've mentioned this multiple times, that he wants Takagi to see him as an equal, a master of industry as sure. well. And that's why he brings up, well, we haven't gotten to the dialogue yet.
But right. Okay, well, go ahead. You can continue with the dialogue.
Oh, I'm going between in and out of glasses over my eyes and over my – okay, sorry. Nice suit. It's John Phillips, London. I have two myself.
And then he smiles like really, really big.
And he goes – and the door opens and he goes
– and he walks out and turns around.
Yeah, rumor has it Arafat buys his there, which I think is very, very important. Because, again, as I keep telling you, he keeps going from, I'm nice, I'm refined, but hey, I will kill you. So yes. For him to drop Arafat, Yasov Arafat, who was the founding member of the PLO or some crap like that, who's been thought of as a terrorist, is kind of like, yeah, don't get it twisted. I'm smart. I know things.
But I also know a terrorist.
Right. He could have brought up anybody that bought a suit at John Phillips London. He brought up Yasov Arafat. Yasser Arafat, who is not above killing to get what he wants. Correct. Put it out.
Very
so,
true.
So, yeah, that was, I think, was a purposeful name drop, I believe.
Right. Okay, well, first of all, John Phillips. I scoured the internet trying to find out what is a John Phillips suit. Mm. And what did I find? That it's fake.
Oh.
Okay, the London tailor was invented for the film's narrative, but Gruber's conspicuous admiration for Takagi's high tailoring, reflects the vain, materialistic, power-hungry psyche of the late 80s.
The yuppies.
The yuppies. Yes. Which is great. You know that right. that you know he's it's also mentioned here about Ellis talking about the Rolex and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, it says here.
It would be very easy for him to say Tom Ford, blah, 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 or whatever. Vera Wang, blah, blah. That's a designer, just so you know.
Yeah. And then there's a great quote here. It says, though he may be wearing the right clothes, Takagi rises above the Grubers and Harry Ellises of the world with his accepting, trustworthy nature, not thinking twice about welcoming the blue-collar John McClane to his corporate celebration.
Right. He knows. He's a rich guy. What they say in Casino Royale? He wears it as James Bond wears the suit with such disdain. He wears very nice clothes, but he's not like he doesn't fit well in them kind of thing. Where he's a regular guy in a very nice suit kind of thing. Yeah. That's kind of mm-hmm. Takagi.
Yeah, so, exactly. We mentioned about Yasser Arafat. So Arafat's real name was Muhammad Abdel Rahman Abdel Rauf Al Kudwa Al Hassani. Okay, which obviously it's easier just to call him Yasser Arafat.
Right.
He was born in 1929 and he passed away in 2004. He was the chairman of the PLO from 1969 to 2004, and he was the first president of the Palestinian National Authority from 1994 to 2004. Okay, he was actually born in Cairo. You know, so any of his claims of being born in Palestine are incorrect.
Right.
After he died in 2004, so he basically died very quickly. He fell into a coma and died. Right. And even it's been 18 years since he died. Nobody is completely sure as to how he died because there are so many rumors about people who've done research on his bones and there are people think that he was possibly poisoned by polonium or
a big one I remember
or that he possibly had AIDS.
Hmm. Didn't hear that.
That he had liver disease or that he had some sort of platelet disorder. Something like that. And I have a whole list here, and I'm not going to go through all of them, about all these experts that all claim different things based on the research they did. Some people claim, that they obtained the medical records, and yes, he did have AIDS. And someone else said, no, I got the records, and he doesn't have AIDS. And someone else got the records and says, no, he was actually poisoned by thallium. And then someone else said, no, he died from food poisoning. And then, basically they say that they dug around his grave and they found traces of polonium. And then so some people said, okay, that's because he was poisoned by polonium. And others say, no, there was just polonium in the soil around him. So we will never know how he actually died.
Right.
You know, but, you know, I guess he's the right type of person to leave controversy in his wake. You know.
Right.
18 years later, nobody still knows how he died.
Nobody still knows. I do like the Hans.
I'm gonna keep you guessing forever.
I do like the Hans smile because it's the recognition that Hans is kind of like, oh, you didn't think I knew that kind of smile, where like, oh yeah,
yeah,
I am not just a thug with a gun. I'm just as smart as you. So don't try any crap. I just love that you mentioned the smile. Like, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, he did that little sneeze. Yeah, I have to myself, which is like, yeah, don't worry. I'm on your level. You might not think I'm on your level, but I'm on your level.
Yeah. And then the shot changes, and we get a shot of John opening up a door, you know, a slight little crack, and he sees three of the thugs, Marco, Heinrich, and Uli, you know, walking by. And there's like this, they're pushing something, and you can see that under a tarp, there's a slightly hidden guided missile, you know, which is obviously for us to know that there is a guided missile on the 35th floor, because he then closes the door and we see that he's on the 35th floor and then decides to descend and go down another flight of stairs. I like the way that they intersperse this whole conversation between Hans and Takagi with little shots of John finding out what's on every floor.
Right. Because right now it's the way it's structured is like, we are really wrapped up in what's about to happen to Takagi because we kind of like this guy. And then you cut away and you're like, oh crap. Yeah. John, what the hell's John doing? I forgot. He's hiding from terrorists with rockets. Oh, wait, what about Takagi? So you're like, you're tennising from two very tense situations.
Yes. Yeah. And then the shot comes back to Hans, and we follow Hans into this humongous room. This must be like a boardroom or something like that. And as he's walking around all of these big tables, actually, that each have these models on them. You know, which could be like an oil refinery and stuff like that. I mean, we're not sure exactly what they all are. I mean,
one looks like a bridge, one looks like an oil rig.
The final one right before we get to the one that's the Nakatomi building, which he stares at, it looks like a pod racer.
Could be. he has Star Wars connections. Yes. George Lucas came by earlier and he wanted to throw something by me.
And he said in 11 years, I'm going to be making a movie with a pod racer.
I'm going to be making a film about the pod racing.
Do you see what I'm talking about? If you look at second 49, you can see that.
Yeah, it does. We're never going to know what that is, but
it definitely looks like a pod racer.
I'm going to just say it's George Lucas came by Takagi. I just did an Empire. I was wondering, can I get some Nakatomi funds? Build one of these things.
Seriously. And then, you know, Hans stands at the building of Nakatomi. And I mean, first of all, it's a pretty amazing model that they have here.
Unnecessary. Completely unnecessary. Amazing model.
No, but I think what they're showing here also is that there might be some truth to what Hans is saying about the degree of Nakatomi, because there's a little bit of haughtiness here. By having all of these models, these intricate models on display in their boardroom of all of these worlds that they have conquered, as you can say, right. You know, I'll let you continue with Hans's dialogue here.
And when Alexander saw the breadth of his domain, he wept, for there were no more worlds to conquer. Benefits of a classical education, which again is another flex. I am smart.
Yes.
Don't think that I'm stupid.
I know what happened to Alexander the Great.
I know who Alexander the Great is. Right. I know the quote. I know everything. So yeah, don't worry.
Yeah.
And I think he wants Kagi to challenge him on certain things, but Takagi is not he they're playing two different games. I think. I think at this, because this is essentially a business meeting.
Yes.
This is how Hans wants it to sees it. I think Takagi's.
He's here to negotiate.
He's going to go. Right, he's in negotiation, but again, he's leaning in on the fact
that
yeah, right. Him and Ellis make the same mistake in the fact that they think that this is a business negotiation that can use business acumen to get out. But Hans wants to play their game, but he knows something that they don't. He has the will that their lives aren't as valuable to him as they think they are. He doesn't care about killing anybody. And I think I think in the midst of the negotiation, they get so caught up in negotiating, they forget, if I don't win this negotiation, I die.
Right.
And Hans will kill me. They forget that. Just for a split second, Takagi forgets it.
Well, Takagi you can sort of forgive because he doesn't know that Hans is willing to do it. Ellis, on the other hand,
he's so high, he doesn't even, yeah.
I'm saying Ellis has seen that Takagi, he knows Takagi's dead.
Right, but he's high as hell. He doesn't know. I think he gets, like, Takagi for a split second gets lost in the negotiation. Ellis is so high, he just thinks everything's going to work out. He doesn't, he's gone at that point. He's using his skills. Takagi was using his skills too, but he only used, he lost track with, I mean, we're going ahead, the posturing at the very end before. The only time I ever see Takagi act like a businessman is right there. Most of the other time, he's just like trying to explain to them that what you're doing is he's trying to figure out what the hell this guy wants most of the time. But then when he does the posturing, which you'll get into later, that's where I see him forget. Just for a little millisecond, that Hans Gruber, he has the ace up his sleeve that they don't know he has, which is, I will kill you. I don't care. I've thought this plan out. I know every. He says it in a later scene. We were talking about every detail. He knows if I go this way and they give me this, I'm gonna go this way. If they go this way and they give me that, I'm gonna go that way. So he knows what leeway he has, and I don't think they realize that.
Yes. Well, that's part of the thing. They underestimated her. All
right,
you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
No, that's pretty much it.
Okay, so there is a little bit of discrepancy in the dialogue. So it starts off by Hans saying, "Nice suit, John Phillips, London?" He actually asks it as a question, where in the movie it sounds as if it's just him making a statement.
Confident. Better choice in the movie.
And then it says, Takagi stares at him speechless. Hans smiles. "I have two myself." As he exits the elevator, I'm told Arafat shops there too. And then it says, the stairwell, McLean starts to open the stairwell door to the machine room when a noise above him gets his attention. He moves silently up one flight to the roof. Quietly, he cracks the door and looks out onto the machine floor on the lower level of the roof. Three terrorists, James, Uli, and Heinrich, are unpacking the wooden crates we saw in the garage from the service elevator. It's not clear what they're doing, but it seems very military-like and ominously defensive. Heinrich points up to the ceiling and says something in German. The others nod. Heinrich starts to turn towards the camera, and McLean closes the door and slips back down the stairs. And then it actually identifies that they're in a conference room boardroom. And then the quote with Alexander is word for word here. Mm-hmm. So that one works out well also.
Right.
So every Wednesday we have a segment called Hans Hump Day, where my guest...
Is that what you call it for real?
That's what we call it, yes. Where my guest...
I love it, I love it, I love it.
Okay. Where my guest will give their top five Alan Rickman performances. So, what have you got for us?
I'm going number five. I'm going to go Dogma. I think Kevin Smith just did what I would do if I had the chance. Write as much funny stuff for Alan Rickman to say and do for as long as he can. And that's pretty much Dogma. It's just like, I got Alan Rickman here. What do I give him to do? Well, I make him say, I'm a Ken doll or whatever. I just give him as much crazy, weird, just off the cuff stuff as I can for him. And then, yeah. So Dogma's number five. Number four, I'm going Love Actually. It's the only story other than, I think, Laura Linney's in that film that has some weight to it, where he kind of plays. People think of love action as, oh, it's just a cheesy, you know, romantic. And this story, other than Laura Linney's, is tragic. It's just, and it's, I think it, with Emma Thompson and him, it works so well. So yeah, I'm going Love Actually. Number three, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. He, Alan Rickman, if Die Hard didn't exist, and even though this is my number three and is one ahead of this, this is probably the most Alan Rickman-y role of any Alan Rickman role ever, because he makes a total meal of this movie, or this role, outclasses Kevin Costner. Kevin Costner is in a completely different movie than Alan Rickman. But Alan Rickman is the one that makes that movie rewatchable to me. So yes, I'm going Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Number two, Galaxy Quest. If you just told me, hey, we're going to make Alan Rickman essentially play Leonard Nimoy professionally and Spock fictionally, yeah, I'm in. Okay, let me see that, because that's essentially what he's playing in the movie. And of course, it's Die Hard number one. It's the greatest villain of all time, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I think it's hard to argue against that statement. I think it also is the best villain in any movie, even better than Darth Vader. And Darth Vader is a great villain.
Darth Vader is a great villain. It's just the more they pick at that onion, it's getting less and less of a good villain, because they keep giving him stuff that keeps making him whittle down into, oh, it was better when I didn't know this and I didn't know that and I didn't see that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. All right. So you want to tell everyone once again, DJ, how they can get in touch with you?
SimplisticReviews.net or Simplistic.Reviews is where you find our website. You can find me on Twitter under at Trying to Be DJV. That's my Twitter handle. And I for the show, I do a lot of show prep through Twitter and Facebook, where I'm like, I'm talking about this show or I'm watching the show now. And then I'll go on the show and I'll go into further detail. So you can follow me on there if you want a little sneak peek at the show. So yeah, follow me on that.
All right, excellent. While you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to this show. You can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on my website. So just do a search for Movie Rob Minute. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Malafa. Whatever the hell he says. What does he say? Malafa.
He garbles it.
Doesn't, he has water in his mouth. He goes, blah.
He was method acting, you know. He was he put marbles in his mouth, like
I believe it.
You know, like we always hear that's what they used to do in the old days. Marlon Brando used to put marbles in his mouth.
I was just watching him on The Offer. The guy playing Marlon Brando was excellent. I think he was putting cotton balls in his mouth to do the Vito Corleone.
Okay, that. Cotton balls in his mouth, marbles in his mouth, same thing. Maybe marbles is for stop stuttering.
Yeah. Where the hell did I see that? That's from something.
Of course it is.
That's from a movie. Where
the King's Speech.
That's what it was. Thank you. Where, it was gonna bother me until I it was gonna bother me.
I
saw that somewhere. Where was that?
Where he constantly swears.
Yes.
With marbles in his mouth.
I gotta spoof the King's Speech. I haven't spoofed a classical movie in a while.
I don't know if you want to call it a classical movie, but okay.
Classicized in terms of Oscar awards, you know, usually we're spoken like action movies, but King's Speech is like, oh.
Okay, so you're saying the benefits of a classical education.
Yeah, benefits of a classical film education movie. I haven't spoofed one of those in a while. Last one I spoofed was The Godfather, so I'll spoof this one there.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, so we'll be back tomorrow again. Yippee-ki-yay.
Motherfucker.